Welcome to On The Record. We are the two mics. I'm Mike Graham. Who are you?
I'm Mike Porky Parry.
And we are about to do one of the favourite parts of our podcast series, which has been going for some time. We should say now, for anyone who doesn't know, you can now get it on Spotify, which is great, because it means if you're a member of Spotify's music streaming scenario, you can now listen to all the Two Mics podcasts going all the way back to the beginning.
That's right.
On Spotify.
Is that right?
Yeah, so if you tell anyone that's on Spotify already, that's what they can do.
Okay.
That will expand even more our ever increasing listenership.
I used to think Spotify was just music, but it's not. No,
you can get podcasts on there as well now.
Wow,
so On The Record
that's
is now available there.
Pretty
now,
good.
I'm going to kick things off with a couple of matters arising from the new year.
Okay.
Because it's only just 2019.
Yes.
And lots of people are thinking about, you know,
I'm very
new,
happy to help
new,
people ease themselves into this year.
Yes. Well, let's kick it off with Lucy, who's got a question for you, Porky. Porky, what are your New Year's resolutions?
Well, I don't have New Year's resolutions. Do you know why? Because I have had this conversation with you, MG, before. Mm. I self-examine myself on a daily basis.
Self-examine?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yes. Self-examine
do you
my
mean
performance.
Physically or just
mentally? No, on how I've done at the end of the day. Have I achieved everything I wanted to achieve? What are my goals and aims for tomorrow morning?
Yes.
When I get up at 4:30 tomorrow, what will I start with? You know, how will I get through the day?
Yeah.
What have I got to address? Because I believe, you see, if you've got a problem, you don't address it head on,
yeah,
that problem will get you.
Yes.
You've got to get the problem before the problem gets you, okay?
But how early can you take the problem on, though?
Well,
because you might not want to take it on too early.
Yeah, but I've told you this before. Some people can only see over the hedge next door, the garden next door.
Yeah.
I can see over the Pyrenees. I can see the problems coming, yeah.
All right. Can you see any problems coming in this next sort of couple of weeks?
Well, there's all sorts of problems all the time coming up. You know, we've got to renegotiate terms of contracts and all that kind of stuff, and the business that we're doing and the work that we're doing.
Mm.
We've got to find, more people to work with us.
You've
got to
make sure you stay alive as well, by the way.
Sorry about that, a bit of the air conditioning or something like that. But anyway, that's fine.
Yeah.
But
I was thinking more in terms of maybe people, problems for other people, not
just for
you.
Well, what I'd say is, and this is Lucy, so I want to say, Lucy, that I hope life is going to be good for you in 2019. And what your resolution should be is not to go backwards, okay?
Mm.
Now, I know that's an easy thing to say because sometimes unfortunate things can happen. You suddenly get the sack at work, a relationship ends, you face some sort of financial crisis because suddenly your dog has been run over by a car, you haven't got enough insurance, you've got to pay for the dog's leg to be mended, it costs thousands of pounds and all that.
Mm.
But what you should try and do is every day is when something like that hits you, when a you know, a hammer blow from hell suddenly hits you, whacks you, you've got to repair it immediately.
Yes.
So what I'd say is, one of your New Year resolutions should be prepared.
Yes.
Now, I know that sounds like scout's honour, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
No.
Wrong with that on the face
and
of
be
it.
Prepared means put a bit of money away, put a bit of emotional strength away, because something's going to hurt you that, you know, will come out of the blue.
Yeah.
And put some divine givenness away to help somebody when they're in trouble, okay?
Yeah.
That would be my...
Well, it's like a karma situation.
That would be my advice to Lucy. Lucy, thank you for being in touch.
All right, Kelly similarly asks a New Year-related question. Please, could you tell me, Porky, what is the cut-off date for wishing someone a Happy New Year? It's a very good question, this.
The cut-off date is midday on New Year's Day. Literally, after that, forget it. It's ludicrous.
What, so
it's,
you mean, if I meet somebody next Monday at work that I haven't seen since before Christmas, I can't say Happy New Year?
No, I never say Happy New Year to anybody after midday on January the 1st. Anybody else who does is an idiot. You've got to get on with life. Can't go around, you know, Happy New Year, Happy New Year. What a waste of time. It's pathetic. If anybody says Happy New Year to me on January the 3rd, I just ignore them, I dismiss them. And they go down in my book as being a plank and a bozo, right? And they go down in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at the Chester Chronicle once, right?
Yes.
And we got a new editor. Herbert Hughes was
Herbert.
The editor for years.
Is he the one that used to have the mistress?
He used to have the mistress who was the news editor. They used to escape to a little hotel
around
the corner and all that. They were both in the 60s.
Sounds a right piece of work.
Yeah, well, it was rather, you know,
seedy.
Rather distasteful to think about what they might have got up to in the back of the office mini.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she had an office mini, you know.
It's not a big space, though.
It's not a big space, but, the, you know, anyway, I don't want to go into that. But anyway, the point of my story is that Herbert eventually retired, a new guy came called Robert somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And we all knew he'd gone mad because he started in the new year.
Yes.
So he started, like, I suppose, January 1st, 2nd.
Yeah.
And the first time we met him was when he came down to the reporter's room. We didn't call it newsroom in those days.
Mm.
And walked around shaking everybody's hand on January the 23rd saying Happy New Year.
Yeah.
And we thought,
but
you know,
had he just started then, though?
Eh?
Had he just started?
No, he started 3 weeks earlier.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's a bit weird, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the guy was off his rocker, and funny enough, shouldn't make a joke of this, he was a Second World War Spitfire pilot.
Was he?
Who had...
Well, you should have held him in high regard.
Held him in very high regard, and guess what? He suffered from... post-traumatic stress disorder.
That's it, PTSD. From
being a pilot. And he only lasted about 18 months.
Yeah.
And then he went off and retired somewhere, you know.
Drove him out.
No, I didn't drive him out. But, I mean, a man of whom I had great respect, but clearly, you know, not really health-wise able to do the job. And it alerted me to it. I alerted everybody. I said, this guy's off his rocker.
Yeah, that's
because,
nice of you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Because 3 weeks
into... It's like a bit of sympathy.
That's right,
what do you make of him? He's off his rocker. Get rid of
3 weeks into the new year, he was just all happy new year. So I honestly believe not a minute after midday on New Year's Day.
Well, interesting that you move us on to newspapers, because here's one from John, who says, Porky, what are your predictions for the future of written media, and do you think printed newspapers will survive?
I think some printed newspapers will survive, but probably in a different form. Got to remember that when MG and I started newspapers, the whole idea was to get a front page out that told you something you didn't otherwise know. That was called a scoop, and it was designed, papers were folded in a way that the headline on the front would catch your attention and make you buy that paper that morning. That was the whole idea of selling newspapers. Over the years, we've been accused many times, oh, you only write a headline to sell a newspaper. That doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work anymore at all. Most of the stuff you read in newspapers now, you're aware of before you get your newspaper.
Well, you've already seen it online, haven't you?
You've seen it online, but you've also seen the story probably on, you know, a 24-hour rolling news channel, or you've seen it on your phone, or you've seen it on Twitter or something like that, you know. So newspapers have got to change, and they are changing. A lot more features in them, interesting features which people want to read and all that kind of stuff. But as for newspapers in the future... They will all die out eventually, because people simply, you know, in the same way that money will die out eventually, because there's no use for it in the technological age. You know, you just don't need it.
Well, interesting that you say that, because Kevin takes us on to the next question. There's a bit of synergy going on here.
Right.
He says, would you ever invest in cyber currency?
No, I don't understand it. And I don't believe in investing in things you don't understand, OK? I mean, for instance, investments now are a very, very topical subject.
Yes.
Because as we left the year 2018, right, can I tell you, it was the worst year of falls on the stock market since 2008, right? Now, you say to yourself, well, what's that got to do with me? You've got to do something with everything. For instance... a portfolio of ISAs, right, which had accumulated to £750,000 from having been bought over the previous 16 or 17 years, and used to only be able to, like, buy one for 10,000 or 11,000. They're up to 20,000 now.
And you can buy more than one, can you?
No, one individual can only buy one, although you can form companies which buy another, if you see what I mean, or acquire another.
Yeah, is that what you do?
Well, I'm not commenting on that at all. I have people who manage my finances.
Of course.
But what I was going to say is that the rise in ISAs over that period, if they were linked to stock markets, which mine were, have gone up quite considerably.
Yeah.
Only to find, at the end of 2018... dropped by 17%.
Well, this is the problem for people's pensions, isn't it?
Of course it is, yeah.
Because people's pensions inevitably are linked to the stock market, albeit that they're not completely just linked to that.
Yeah.
But whenever the stock market's underperforming, then the pension's underperforming.
Yeah, absolutely. And
people are finding themselves having to work another 5 years.
That's right. When you find that £750,000 has suddenly become 17% less, which is like £90,000 off that, it's a shock.
It is.
And people are suffering that shock now. Mm. And it does mean, you're absolutely right, some people, instead of having pensions, as you talked about, will have estimated they'll live on their earnings for the rest of their life at £50,000 a year or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it means they're running out of years if the £90,000 has been taken out of that fund.
Yes.
So, no, bitcoins I won't invest in because A, I don't understand them. B, I think there's an element of fraud around or potential for fraud within the Bitcoin industry.
I mean, there are some now which are being sort of recognised and officially kind of looked upon as worth dealing in by some of the central banks.
Yes.
But I've been hearing an awful lot of cryptocurrencies used by criminals.
Right.
Because they launder
money. That's right.
That's how they launder their drug money.
That's right.
Because there's machines now that you can go to in the back of some of these dodgy sort of 24-hour shops in South London, for example.
Yes.
And you can put cash into a machine and it will give you cryptocurrency out.
Yeah, but in what form?
Well, I think it's a computer transfer.
That's what
kind.
I mean. Yeah, you don't saying, actually get a like a piece of metal.
No, I don't think you get physically a piece of metal. What you are basically doing is laundering all the cash that you've just made that night on the drug deal.
Yes,
and you're suddenly now converting it into something else.
I'm sure you're right. When I was subject to a scam recently, by somebody who
These blackmailers.
They're blackmailers. Yeah, they sent you a note saying, right, let's cut to the chase. Yeah, they actually start off by saying that.
Right.
Let's cut to the chase. You know, we know what you get
they
up to.
They claim to have had all sorts of horrible information.
What they claim is, quite simply, and I didn't even know I had a camera on my laptop anyway. Right. I've never used it.
Everybody does.
Yeah, everybody does, yeah. And they said, we know you watch, you know, extreme pornography, you know, revolting, disgusting, or a lot of it is illegal.
Is it?
We also know that, you know, in response, you know, you stimulate yourself watching it. No, it's true. All this is in a bloody email. You know?
Well, just as well you don't do it.
Of course,
otherwise
absolutely.
You might have had to pay them.
No, well, they tried on with thousands of people, I'm sure. I'm sure the odd one or two probably think, my God, you know.
There's, I mean, I've seen several shows like, do you remember Homeland? I don't know if you've ever watched, but she, the woman in Homeland, gets done over by some guy who basically locks all of her files and says that remotely, he says, you will not be able to gain access to your files until you pay me X amount of money.
Right. Yeah.
Because she's a secret agent, she tracks him down and fucking kills him.
Yeah, good.
You know, but basically,
that's what
you know,
people should do.
Yeah, but basically, people have been in that situation where they think they, in order to free up their essential files for working and living, they pay these people money, and then of course they get another demand.
Yeah,
to pay them again.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't stop.
Well, what happened here was this guy said, anyway, look, we know that you, you know, we can access any part of your, you know, your business now. No, we know that you're a wealthy man.
Yeah.
And what they then said was, however, you pay us £19,000, very strange
bloody
amount,
hell.
In bitcoins, within the next 24 hours, we will not circulate these filthy pictures of you to all your friends. We've got your contacts list and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, I just ignored it.
Of course.
I didn't even bother reporting it to the police.
They didn't contact me.
No, they didn't contact anybody because they don't exist. No. But point is, I then rang the bank and said, look, I want to make absolutely sure you lock in all my accounts, because these people are threatening.
Yeah, yeah.
So I gave the bank warning.
Yes.
The reason you have to do that...
It's a legal protection.
Well, not only that, but then if the money goes, you can say, no, the phone call came and I told
that's
you
what
to...
I mean. Yeah. Legal protection.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so you've warned them.
That's right,
because you didn't
them.
Tell
yeah.
them, they're supposed to not know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, how about this one from Neil? He says, Porky, you've just had your birthday. How old do you think you will be by the time Everton win a trophy again? That's a bit below the belt, that one.
Bit below the belt, and just very briefly, because not everybody's interested in Everton Football Club, you know, a shocking sort of Christmas New Year period, and I got quite mouthy about Everton.
Yeah,
and
but you know, people give you a hard time for that, but it's your passion.
Yeah, exactly.
I take the piss out of you as well, of course, because I would.
Yeah,
but you're entirely within your rights
to do it. Of course, I am.
And nobody should criticise you for it.
I questioned the appointment of Marcus Silva, the manager, at the start of the season.
Yeah,
that didn't go down very well with senior people at Everton, who said, "Don't you realise he's a genius?"
Yeah.
Well, he got sacked at Watford because he didn't
perform.
Well,
he wasn't that good, was he? Yeah.
Wasn't that good?
And in fact, the blame was put on Everton for why he lost his mojo.
That's right.
But in fact, it may just be that he wasn't very good.
He wasn't very good. Well, so what are we going to say now? Oh, actually, he's turned out to be not very good at Everton. I tell you what, I think we'll blame Barcelona because we've heard that they've been sort of, you know, trying to tap him up.
It's a great scam, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
Where you're going up and they're going to do my job because somebody's tapping me up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and that's where I've lost
my concentration went and all
of a
sudden I became bloody useless, you know. But I mean... But before that, he'd only done a bit at Hull. And my view is that because he's got an exotic name, Marco Silva, he's Portuguese, friend of Jose Mourinho, people say, there's, you know, Marco Silva. And Sean Dyche,
Major
Berlin, had an offer to go to Everton, and I thought about it. You know, doesn't sound as exotic. So, I'm sorry, at the moment, I'm not happy with the situation.
No, indeed. Mm. Now, here's one on Facebook. So far, all of those questions have come from Twitter.
Okay.
The first one from Facebook is from Michael, who says, Porky, if you had a lady friend round for dinner, would you let MG cook for both of you?
No, definitely not. Wouldn't be anywhere near the place.
Why not?
Well, you have the morals of an alley cat.
Oh, really?
And my view is that if you ever see an opportunity, a chance to impress a member of the female fraternity, you know, a woman, that is.
Yeah,
then you will always try, and you will try to be suave and smooth.
I can't help the way I am.
You'll try to buy £180 bottles of drink.
Not
and,
true.
And try to impress, try to make out that you're a man of the world and all that. I wouldn't have you anywhere
but
near
women
me.
But women can tell that I know how to look after them. That's why they...
Yeah, well, I know how to look after them. Don't worry about
that, that's why they're friendly to me,
I could invite women to my penthouse, couldn't I?
You could do, yeah, but it's not really a penthouse.
I know, how to look after you. You know, there's no problem at all. You can come down here and stay with me on the coast. Absolutely no problem at all. But what I was going to say was, of course, I wouldn't be as foolish as to say, oh, come back to my place and I'll cook dinner for you. What a complete waste of time.
Well, it would be, yeah.
Well, you could take a woman out and take her for dinner.
Yeah.
Or you could say, look, I'll get some caterers in.
But normally
that would impress,
when you take a woman
impress.
Out for lunch or dinner, they get so legless that you end up having to put them in a cab and send them home.
Not at all.
Isn't that what happened the last time?
No, not at all.
Are you sure?
Not at all.
Really?
I can tell you, didn't it? We parted company in from a very reputable establishment in Soho and made our way home.
Was that the strip bar?
It wasn't the strip bar. I've never been to a strip bar.
You have? I saw you got into one.
I went into the foyer of one where there was a TV showing an England game one night when we finished work in Soho.
Yes.
And I did not go into the main auditorium where the pole dancers were.
They weren't very much, though, were they?
Well, I don't know because I didn't go in there, so I wouldn't know.
Okay.
So the answer to that one is no, I wouldn't want MG to have anything to do with my associations with women. No,
okay.
No.
One final one before we take a little break from Gren. He says, ask Porky, I've been watching too much TV quite a bit, and why does he always have a drink in his hand, considering he says he doesn't drink very much?
Well, a lot of the stuff you're talking about will be in the Mike Graham kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And we have to have drink in the Mike Graham kitchen for two reasons. Firstly, no decent food should be unaided without alcohol, you know, in moderation, of course. Bladder in modo is our phrase, our framework, the way we live our lives. And secondly, of course, because generally speaking, it's in a social situation that you and I have found ourselves in, and we're basically on Two Mics TV inviting the audience to come in and join a bit of the, you know, the revelry of our lives.
With a bit of libation in hand,
revelry of our lives. Yeah. We want you to get involved and come and see how the Two Mics work and how they play and how we operate and what we do. It's all there on Two Mics TV. In fact, we've done a load of stuff recently in Fleet Street, the Mike Graham Kitchen.
Yeah.
Face to face, of course, one of our newer features.
Yes.
Where we sit
head to head, isn't it?
Head to head and look at it. Face to face, head to head, whatever you say. And it's all going spiffingly, I have to say.
It is. Now, we're halfway through this particular version of Ask Porky.
Yes.
A lot of people have been wondering about what to do in the wake of the Christmas and New Year holidays.
Right.
But we're getting more now into sort of more general questions.
Indeed. Let's do
John
that.
has sent this one in on Facebook, and he says this, with shows like The Sopranos, Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones, does Porky believe that we are now living in a golden age for television?
Well, I think it is a golden age of television, because what I was particularly impressed about over the last 12 months are the amount of dramas which are now appearing on television. Now, the BBC get free money, right? So they can spend big money on dramas. And I have to say they've done some that I've watched
and
very well.
You know
well.
What? In some ways with the BBC, as much as I'm a critic of this, a lot of those dramas that they spend a lot of big money on, they do get money back from America and other parts of the world.
It's called BBC commercial.
Yeah, where
they get money back. But I have to say that, you know, making, you know, great television is what the BBC are around for. And I can't actually remember the actual programmes I'm talking about, but we're down to Downton Abbey, was that BBC?
Well, Downton Abbey was ITV.
ITV,
I mean,
that's right.
Bodyguard last year.
Bodyguard, that's right.
Killing
absolutely.
Eve was another one.
Killing Eve,
raved
was brilliant.
About.
Yeah.
I mean, and also just all the kinds of new drama.
Yeah, that's right.
That
that's
BBC
right.
have been getting into over the course of the last couple of years.
I found them all very good indeed, and so the BBC get free money. But the reason why there's a lot of drama now, and the reason why, for instance, Disney have made a bid to take over Mr. Murdoch's organisation, Fox, or parts of it anyway,
parts of the studios,
is because, you know, some of the mega companies in the world, like Amazon and like Netflix,
Facebook,
are spending billions, and I mean billions of pounds, producing programmes because they realise there are markets around which are still untapped in the world, like China and India, and these growing economies, and they want to get the money back, and the returns back are huge.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, did you see that Microsoft have become the biggest company in the world again?
Is that right?
Since
overtaken Amazon again.
As we came out of the Christmas boom, because shares didn't go too well in the publicly quoted companies, and Microsoft is not. Microsoft are now worth, I think...
So it's back on top again.
I think it's over $606 billion.
Amazing.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Here's one from Rob. Yeah. Are there any plans for more live shows from the Two Mics, possibly one in the summer?
Well, funny
We're
you should
talks,
say that.
Aren't we?
We are in talks, and in fact, you'll have seen an exchange of notes with Sean from myself and yourself over the holiday period. But now we're back into the real world. We'll be talking about that. I would say without wanting to raise anybody's hopes,
yeah.
a location like Leeds or Newcastle, somewhere northeast, maybe on the cards this summer.
Right.
Maybe on the cards this summer, depending on what we've got. We've also been invited to go to places as far as Ibiza to perform shows for people who are having birthdays and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of those, so there may be a few private shows, but certainly public
ones.
One of
my daughters relocated to Dubai.
Yes.
That may also be a destination.
That could easily be
although
a destination.
I'm not sure you and I should go to Dubai because, Blado
in Modo
really, really carefully preserved.
Yeah. I totally agree.
You don't want to get locked up in some hellhole in the middle of the desert.
People go on about, oh, well, Dubai's dangerous to go to because of the morals and all that. Hang on, we're talking about a woman who was performing a physical act of sex on a man in the back of a taxi. Fellatio, indeed. Well, in my view, she should be arrested
Fellatio
for that.
Nelson.
And if it happened in this country, she should have been arrested
here as well. Yeah, but
so
I don't
to say that, oh, they're very strong on morals there. Well, I'm sorry, if you see two people shagging on the beach in full view of everybody else, walking up and down the boardwalk, they should be arrested as well.
Have you never had somebody perform a sex act on you in the back of a taxi?
I'm not going to answer a question like that. That's disgusting.
Is it? Okay, all right.
That's
just thought disgusting. I'd ask. I mean, that's not one of those ask porky questions.
When I worked at the petrol station...
It's not unknown, is it?
Well, I was going to say, when I worked at the petrol station, funny enough, there was a private taxi rank next door because there was a private taxi firm, I used to have
private hire.
Private hire,
always
that's
dodgy, those places.
Yeah, private hire. Right? Yeah. And there was one guy there who had a Ford Zephyr.
Oh, yeah.
And they were cars with a great long bonnet at the front,
Very flash, weren't they?
Very flash.
Did
it
have
that.
The pointy back end? As
pointy
well?
Back end. That's right. Yeah. And every morning, at about 2 or 3 in the morning, when I was doing like an overnight shift, he's
stealing the old red diesel.
Well, I was stealing the red diesel. His car would start rocking up and down. And this bloke, honestly, he was only about sort of 5'4" or 5'5", had this huge car. But he used to invite women into the back of his car, who just staggered out of nightclubs, drunk. And he used to have sex with them on a regular basis in the back of the car.
What, in return for a ride home or something?
Something like that. Or something like that. I don't know. But he's at it all the time.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful. Rick has said this on Facebook. If I were to put you in charge of anti-drone squads, whose purpose would seem to be to combat the growing threat of now seemingly helpless we are to these attacks, what would be your main solution?
My main solution would be to invent a radar system from ground up, not air down. Now, by that, what I mean is, we've all heard the expression about, getting under the radar.
Yes.
And that is a scientific expression that radar signals started in the Battle of Britain, by the way.
Uh-huh.
That's where they first came in.
Right.
We put up towers on the coast.
Yes.
And the Germans didn't know we had it. Uh-huh. We sent out radar signals, and they gave us a 2 or 3 minute alert to the fact that the German bombers were coming.
Luftwaffe.
Yeah, the Luftwaffe and the Messerschmitt. Yeah. To accompany them.
Yeah.
And they, Germans, couldn't work out for ages how we could scramble, because that was it.
Scramble!
And then the Spitfires and the Hurricanes would go up. That's right. They couldn't work out for a while how we were getting up there to intercept them before they could start their bombing raids on RAF bases.
Yeah.
Now, the Germans then investigated it, and their spies worked out that the radar were coming from the top of beacons, right?
Yeah.
So they said flying under the radar. Yes. That's where the expression came from.
Now, so is it true to say then that radar doesn't operate below a certain height? Or does it depend on where the actual signal's coming from?
No, that's absolutely right. And also, remember that the reason stealth aircraft were built by the Americans, now built by lots of people around the world, originally was because the lower you go, the weaker the radar signal is, and it glances off a smooth surface.
Oh, right, okay.
So it doesn't pick you up.
Because I think the dam busters went in under the radar.
Went in under the radar, absolutely
right.
Because
by then the Germans had their own version of it.
Well, that's funny you should say that. The Germans tried to invent their own version of it. They didn't have it right, and they positioned it in the mountains around the dams, but it didn't work. They didn't pick up the dam busters.
Right.
The dam busters were all brought down by ACK fire.
Yes.
Because what happened was the Dutch resistance were going to blow up all the ACK guns, and they were treacherously informed upon on the day of the raid, were attacked by the SS and all massacred.
Yeah.
So the Dambuster squadron had to go in without any protection whatsoever. But anyway, to answer your question, what I've said is, and I don't know why scientists haven't gone onto this yet, If you could invent a radar system of ground up,
yeah,
that would get the drones.
Well, there's meant to be something called a sky shield.
Exactly.
Which I've heard about. Yeah. Some prisons have operated
that's
on
right.
that to stop people
it
from
is.
Flying into
yeah,
the prisons
flying drones
with drones
over. That's
that.
Right. And also, they can be blasted out of the sky.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, if I tell you that one of the ships that's moored in Portsmouth Harbour, HMS Diamond, right, which is a Type 45 ship, that could take out a cricket ball 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
With one missile, and the cricket ball would be moving. Mm. It could take it out of the sky. Mm. So if you've got that sort of technology
on
board a ship...
Well, we've all seen that video as well. Do you remember the video that people were doing the rounds with when Gatwick was having a problem
before
Christmas?
Yeah.
Where it was at a football match, and somebody threw a toilet roll.
That's right.
This drone took it down.
That's right.
It came
down.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Hit with a toilet roll.
Absolutely. And nets, you can throw nets at them and all sorts of things. But basically, what you do is there is technology in this country which has been developed. Because of the terrorists invented this new tactic of driving lorries into people and all that, there is now a method of cutting the engine off in that lorry.
Is there?
A diesel or petrol engine. And you must be able to take the power out of a drone. So the answer
is,
we should be able to do it.
Okay. Chris says, Porky, where do you recommend for a stag do for my mate Ashley? I know you love a good stag do.
Yeah. Well, I don't actually love a good stag do.
I've
never been on a stag do. Yeah. I refuse on two grounds. Basically,
You didn't even come on mine because you weren't there, were you?
I didn't come on yours.
You were in Britain.
I was in Britain.
Yeah.
Basically, I think it's an insult to the lady you're marrying to say, all right, one more free night of bladderation, rogerisation, disgraceful behaviour.
Well,
it usually is.
Well, it can be. Mine wasn't.
The whole idea is that it's going to be disgraceful and all that. That's what I don't get about it. I'm not going to go and be a performing monkey for some bloke who's getting married just to, you know, make his male...
Unless they pay you an awful lot of money.
Make his male ego sore and all that kind of stuff. But secondly, I just don't enjoy a lot of the people you'd meet on a stag do. I've only got about two or three people I'd bother having spend time having a drink with anyway. And I wouldn't certainly go out in a gang where there were like eight or ten.
And
loads of
other people
stand.
That you don't know.
No, exactly. And also, you go out and say, right, okay, lads, let's get a kitty together.
Yeah.
What do you want a kitty for? I've got my own money. I'll buy my own fucking drink when I want my drink.
Yes.
I'm not going to say, oh, like, time for another round. I might not be ready for another round.
I hate doing things en masse.
So do I.
With loads of other people.
So do I.
Right,
I can't
now
stand
we're
it.
All going to do a shot of tequila.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not now.
No.
Because immediately I know everybody else is doing it. I'm not going to do it.
You get in a pub and there's eight or ten of you around the table and you're causing noise, you're being raucous and all that. And then somebody's like, right, whose turn is it to get them in? You know, right, here's the kitty.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it takes half an hour because the guy's gone off and ordered eight drinks and he's bringing them back one at a time.
Could be 20.
Yeah, 20 drinks and all that. So, and as for Ashley, anybody called Ashley, I simply don't like.
Really?
Simple as that.
That's a bit harsh.
Well, I don't
I
mean...
was watching Gone with the Wind over the Christmas holidays because I've got... years ago, I bought a double a DVD for the mother of my children.
Oh, yes.
Box set. It cost me about 50 quid.
Right.
Because I'd promised to get her the Gone with the Wind, you know, but they didn't have an ordinary copy of it.
Right.
It came with a bloody poster.
Yeah, and a
and
book.
Some fucking book, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, and it, the quality of it was so bad.
Probably, you know, and the outtakes as well.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Old shite.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, because it's so old now, I bought it about, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. The sound quality is really not very good.
Right, okay.
Anyway, but of course, the main character, one of the main characters in the Gone with the Wind is Ashley. Ashley!
Oh,
you know,
it?
The guy that the Vivian Lee can't get away from. She loves him. But he marries somebody else.
Oh, the guy with the little moustache?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
not Clark Gable.
Clark Gable
is the cad, right?
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Who really loves her.
Oh,
and who she has this sort of raucous affair with.
Right, okay.
But the man of her dreams
the
is Ashley. There's a very famous scene.
Well,
which probably wouldn't be
cotton fields are rotten.
Well, no,
when
you
got
the scene
me,
where he,
you
no,
don't need cotton. Sorry, go on, yeah.
No, he carries her up the stairs.
Stairs, that's right.
In what can only be assumed is a sort of a position of sexual
a
energy.
To rogerisation.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And, I mean, the word is, if you're a student of the movie, that he kind of takes her by force,
which
of course nowadays wouldn't be allowed.
No.
Because that would not be in any way the sort of thing to encourage young men to do.
Exactly.
But no, Ashley Wilkes is the guy who she wants to marry, who's the sort of do-gooder, everybody loves him, he's a really nice bloke, but he's really boring.
Yeah, boring, yeah. I don't mean... Mike Ashley, because that's a surname.
Yes.
I mean,
you don't mind him.
No, but anybody called Ashley is a Christian name. There was a character in Coronation Street, Ashley.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, Ashley. Yeah. And he was the weakest, wettest.
Is it sort of
most
chavvy
pathetic.
Name? Is that what you're saying?
No, it was just, name's Ashley. What do you do? I'm the baker's lad. No, I'm not. I'm the butcher's lad. I'm going to train to be a butcher, but I can't stand the sight of blood. And the other Ashley I knew was once the son of a guy I worked with who. was a complete and utter tosser, right. Who tried to emulate all the worst aspects of his father's character, right. But he wasn't even half as good as his father at being a twat, you know what I mean?
That's a bit harsh. Here's one from Mark. It says, Porky, if you had managed to blag your way through that interview at Brasenose College, where do you think your life would have taken you with a degree from Oxford University?
Well, that's very interesting, because I would have gone there and done PPE, which is Politics, Philosophy and Economics, which in fact David Cameron, former Prime Minister, who was not very good at his job
as
Prime Minister.
Really. No, he's not somebody you should want to emulate.
No.
He's the guy that got us into all these Brexit
shenanigans. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did. Yeah, misjudged.
Yeah, well done,
completely
Dave.
Misjudged an election, completely misjudged a referendum, completely misjudged, you know, the opposition, completely misjudged the situation in Libya, completely misjudged everything, you know. And the worst Prime
and
Minister.
And even his own party.
But he was a guy. I mean, he was a rich kid who once said, you know, wouldn't it be great to be Prime Minister? How hard can it be? He didn't think there was any responsibility in being Prime Minister.
No.
He thought it was just a bit of a laugh, you know, Bullingdon Club at Oxford, got old
Boris Johnson. Well, guys like him
Boris
have this
Johnson.
Kind of entitled idea
they do.
Of life.
They do.
And so for him to become Prime Minister, if you and I ever became Prime Minister, not that we would want to, it would be a massive honour.
Astonishing thing,
But for somebody like Cameron, he was just like, I'll just do this for a while.
His family
what do you
background.
Think, Sam?
Yeah.
You know, I'll just continue to make a bucket load of money from the businesses that my family own.
Yes, that's right. No, it's absolutely true.
It's a different world.
I remember Michael Heseltine, you know, former Defence Secretary, walked out over the Westland helicopter scandal. And all that kind of stuff. When he was at Cambridge, although he didn't come from as good a background as Cameron.
He was a bit more of a successful businessman.
Oh, he's very successful. Haymarket Publishing. Yeah. He's worth 100 million quid at least. Mm. But, you know, they're all so pompous and the sense of entitlement. And I remember him saying, I was lying on the cricket field at Eton, before going off. No, was it Eton? No, it must have been at Cambridge. Lying the cricket field at Cambridge, you know. He said, I've got the final exams coming. What am I going to do? He said, and I got out a cigarette packet and I jotted down, you know, millionaire, MP, PM, in that order.
Oh, yeah.
And it nearly all came true for him, except he fucked up trying to stab Mrs. Thatcher. And John Major nipped in.
Yeah.
But anyway, what was the question again?
The question was, how do you think your life might have changed?
Oh, I see, yes, okay.
If you had a degree from Oxford University instead of no degree from Polytechnic of Nottingham.
No. You're talking about the University of the Trent.
From which you didn't get a degree.
Well, I didn't stay to get a degree.
I'm just saying.
Because journalism was the calling I wanted to get into.
I'm just telling you the facts.
And so I left a bit like you did actually
and
got into it. But I could have been very successful, probably as a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah, very wealthy.
Uh-huh.
Probably would have lived
are wealthy.
Well, I would have been more wealthy, I think, with less effort, if you see what I mean.
Right.
Yeah. It's easy to make loads of money as a lawyer. You just talk a load of bollocks to somebody and then hand them a bill for 10 grand.
Isn't that what you do now?
That's a bit harsh.
Well, I mean, there are those who would say that's exactly what you do.
No, but I mean...
It just takes slightly longer to get it.
Yeah, and you don't tell as many people when you're a lawyer. You just tell somebody across the desk.
You don't have to dress up, either.
You don't have to dress up, that's right. Mind you, I would have liked working in the Middle Temple or somewhere like that.
Because of the women?
Yes,
because I
am very heterosexual.
Just the black pencil skirts.
Yeah, that's right. Seeing all these ladies with long legs in black pencil skirts and black tights.
Do you remember that we used to go to...
And those frilly white blouses.
Yeah,
we used to go to that.
It was a curry house, right? It was right up at the end of Fleet Street, almost opposite the Law Courts.
Yeah, I did remember.
And we used to go in on a Friday night, and it was always full of pissed up court clerks, barristers, secretaries.
That's right,
and a whole kind of litany of legal figures.
I know.
Who were all great fun.
Oh, yeah.
And
brilliant.
We all used to end up sort of sitting around the same tables joshing around. Very good.
That's right. And there are a couple of bars down there, which you go right down the back of the Middle Temple.
Down to the left there.
That's right. And they would stay up until 1 in the morning and all that kind of stuff. It was great. So I'd have been a major star there.
Okay.
Major star. And I'd have had a Rolls Royce parked outside my office. Yeah, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Charlie says this. Who are the best and worst guests you've had on the radio with you?
Well,
we know who the worst one is going to be, don't we?
Yeah, the worst one is... what's his name again?
Jay,
that's right, yeah, Jay...
Jay Rayner,
you know, we wouldn't
he's still
talk
getting
about chicks.
Clogged, you know?
Over
Christmas, the number of people
that's right.
that he was still blocking.
That's right, yeah.
And, I mean, you know that he's given interviews about the two mics. Max.
That's right.
In the past, where he says, yes. you know, I had no idea that when I went on this radio show, that my life would be turned inside out.
That's right.
He said, when they started giving me death threats and sort of wishing my mother ill and all that, even though she's already dead, he said, that's when I realised it had gone way beyond a joke.
He wouldn't ask about whether or not McCain's chip should be served at the Ritz.
All because he said, oh, I thought I was coming to talk about tipping.
Yes, that's right.
You know, made a complete plank of himself.
Yeah, he did,
but we still have members of our Two Mics fan club, if who send him from time to time.
Good.
You know, what do you think? There's the chips at the Ritz, Jay, and he blocks them. He's blocked thousands of people.
Yeah, McCain's now send their chips to the Ritz, what do you think? And he wouldn't answer the question. Yeah. That's up to him. Yeah. The best, of course, has to be on a one-off comment about... Rod Stewart's home in the property column.
Yeah.
We suddenly got a call from Rod.
Yes.
It has to be having Brian May in the studio talking about badgers and the planets because he's a, what is he? He's a,
well, he's an astronomer, isn't
astronomer,
he?
Astronomer, as well as astrologer. I think he's an astronomer.
No, if he's an astrologer, he'd tell you
he's
a fucking horoscope.
I think he's a physicist.
Yeah, he's a nuclear physicist,
That's right, yeah. It has to be...
Imperial College, I think.
Imperial College. It has to be one of the Dolores girls who came in and played a violin with me while I sang, you know. It has to be...
I'd say Sandra Lee's up there as well. You know, our good friend from
Australia. Oh, yeah, absolutely, right.
I mean, Sandra's always great, fantastic people. Steve Lillywhite.
To have Sandra.
Steve Lillywhite. Who always makes an effort to come and see us.
Six Grammy Awards, you know, and humbly comes in and sits there with us, as he did on our end of year one, at the end of 2018.
You've had a couple of big boxing guys as well,
I wasn't that impressed by them. They seemed a bit reticent to talk. I haven't had Lennox Lewis. Marvin Hagler? No, not Marvin Hagler. No, he was the world heavyweight champ. I've got his book.
You had the guy, Evander Holyfield.
Evander Holyfield.
Who had a bit of his ear bitten off by Mike Tyson.
That's right. Evander Holyfield came in. He was very impressive. Yeah. And, of course, you know, from my own point of view, Alan Ball was, of course, one of my heroes.
Yeah.
And also, do you remember we had Cameron in before he was the Prime Minister?
Well, no, you were with
Andy Townsend.
Yeah, but you just slagged him off. So you can't say he was one of the great guests.
No, but it was great to have a former, a future Prime Minister in your studio.
Yeah.
So, yeah, been very lucky and attracted in a lot of good people.
Okay. We're nearly
and not so good people.
We're nearly at the end here, so we'll just speed up a little bit. Rupert says, hi. He says, I'm 44 and the wife wants to get a mortgage. She's 35, so for her, it's a great investment. But I fear I'll be dead before I own it. What shall I do? As a professional slum landlord, I bow to your superior knowledge.
There's nothing wrong at all with having a mortgage at 44, mate. Hmm. Let me tell you this. A 20-year mortgage at 44, you'd be 64. That's well within working age.
I'm pretty sure
age.
I got one when I was 44.
I'm sure you would have done. If I wanted to, and I get you get offers all the time because people know that you have a, you know, a portfolio... I've been offered, you know, I'm into early middle age, and I've been offered mortgages up to 70 years of age.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But that's probably an account of the massive amount of money you've got.
There. No, I haven't got massive money. I wish I did have. And can I say to you that when I got my first house, the standard mortgage was 25 years, right? Uh-huh. So I got my first mortgage when I was about 24, so that would have taken me to 50. Now, even in those days, you were expected to work to 65, and life expectancy was about 70. These days, most people are expected to work to 70 because their own state pension won't come until about 66 or 67, and people are expected to live to at least 75. I mean, the number of people now who work diligently and hard, and I'm talking about people like Paul McCartney, talking about Rod Stewart, talking about Mick Jagger,
Elton John,
but in many other areas, people, I mean, we've got colleagues at TalkSport who are into their 70s and still working very hard and doing a great job.
Well, we're lucky that we have a job that you can do.
Yeah, that's right.
Into early middle age.
So the world has changed a bit. And at 44, mate, if I were you, I would take out a 20-year mortgage, certainly, but take out a 25-year. They'll give you a mortgage up till 70.
Yeah.
Makes it easier to repay it.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Luke says, when are you going to write an autobiography, Porky? It would be a number one bestseller, just like Rooney Tunes.
Yeah. I mean, that's being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Mm. Of course, Rooney Tunes didn't take off because Rooney didn't play at the World Cup.
No.
Well, he did play. He played with a broken toe, and therefore...
Metatarsal,
and therefore it all went south, you know, and he wasn't the star of the show. And therefore they pulled the book to all intents and purposes. Right.
Whatever happened to all the books he was... Because was he not contracted to write about five books?
And he only
did one.
He did one with that... Old, when I say old, I don't mean derogatory, Hunter Davis.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Who was 70.
That's
when Rooney was in his early 20s.
He was still pretty much at the height of his career then, wasn't he?
He was at the start of his career.
Yeah.
I think he was only 20.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't think he was even 21. And it was after the first, you know, tournament. Mm. And he was only 18 at the first tournament. Yeah. So that came out, and there was a clear, like, difference of understanding about his life between a man of 70 and a man of 20.
Yeah.
And so they said, we'll shop around now for a new author for the second one.
Yeah.
The second one should have come out at the end of the World Cup 2010. He canned the book, his
that
agent.
That was South Africa, wasn't it?
That's right.
Because that was where he was really not terribly well-behaved, shouting at the crowd.
And all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And England did appallingly badly. So Paul Stretford, his agent, I think, or somebody did, decided that the second volume
so
wasn't coming
written,
out.
So it got written, but didn't get published, presumably.
I don't think it ever got written. It was going to be written after the World Cup.
Yeah.
I, at the same time, wrote a book for a footballer who pulled it.
Yeah.
And I also know that John Terry... was also having a book written at the end of the 2010 World Cup, pulled it as well.
Right.
And that was the start of the demise of football biographies.
Books, yeah,
and it's been very difficult to find one that works since. So you've got to remember that the popularity of people these days is not always reflected in the sales of books.
Yeah.
It's reflected more in what you and I do, and that is podcasts, because we're broadcasters, return much, much bigger numbers in terms of people who get involved than people who go out and buy books these days.
One final question as we come to the end of this particular podcast.
Yeah.
Leo says, who's going up in the Championship? He's hoping you're going to say Norwich. It's very wide open this year.
Yeah.
No runaway leaders. It makes it very exciting.
Yeah, well, Leeds are an obvious contender. Uh-huh. Norwich are an obvious contender.
West Brom are up there?
West Brom are up there, but what I was going to say is it would be a fairy tale if Frank Lampard got Derby up.
Yes.
Because, I mean, he really has made a huge impact on the Championship. He's said time and time again, this is a, you know, a Premier League setup here at Derby. It'd be nice to see him in the Premier League. But the only thing I'd warn about that is, you might remember years ago, Roy Keane took on a struggling Championship side, Sunderland.
Yeah, Sunderland, yeah.
He got him up, right?
Yeah.
You know, iron discipline and all that kind of stuff. I don't think Frank Lampard's like that. Frank Lampard's a much, much... man management type guy, much more man management.
He's more
than,
thoughtful as well.
Yeah,
isn't
more
he?
Thoughtful and a deeper thinker of the game. I agree with all that, and I think he could well get them up as well.
I like to look at the numbers of teams there.
Yeah.
In the top, say the top eight.
Yeah.
Actually, if you go top ten, right? Listen to these names: Leeds United, Norwich, Sheffield United, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Derby, Nottingham Forest, Birmingham, QPR, Aston Villa.
Yeah.
All formerly, you know, certainly first
teams,
division stroke Premier League teams.
Yeah. But of course, they can't all go up. The point you find with the Championship is that actually, it's all decided in the final third of the season.
Yeah.
And often teams which have led the way in the first two thirds just burn out because they don't have the resources or the size of squads that Premier League teams have, and they just fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
Interesting to see that as we speak, Steve Bruce lined up for the Sheffield Wednesday job.
Yeah.
That'll be his 10th club that he's managed in this country.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Well, that was Ask Porky. We'll do another one probably in February. But don't forget, we'll be doing lots more on the Record podcast. They come out every Tuesday and every Thursday with the 2 months. Have you never had somebody perform a sex act on you in the back of a taxi?
I'm not going to answer a question like that. That's disgusting.
Is it? Okay, all right.
That's
just thought
disgusting.
I'd ask. I mean, that's not one of the Ask Porky questions.
Funny enough, when I worked at the petrol station...
It's not unknown, is it?
Well, I'm going to say, when I worked at the petrol station, funny enough, the there was a private taxi rank next door because there was a private taxi firm, you know what I mean? They used to have
Private hire.
Always
dodgy, those places.
Yeah, private hire. Right. Yeah. And there was one guy there who had a Ford Zephyr.
Oh, yeah.
And they were cars with a great long bonnet at the front.
Yeah, very flash, weren't they?
Very flash.
Did
they
have the pointy back end?
Back end, that's right, And every morning at about 2 or 3 in the morning when I was doing like an overnight shift, you know. He's
stealing the old red diesel.
Well, I wasn't stealing the red diesel. His car would start rocking up and down. And this bloke, honestly, he was only about sort of 5'4" or 5'5", had this huge car. But he used to invite women into the back of his car who just staggered out of nightclubs, drunk. And he used to have sex with them on a regular basis in the back of the car.
Well, in return for a ride home or something?
Something like that. Or something like that, I don't know. But he's had it all the time.
That's shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have been very successful, probably as a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah, very wealthy.
Uh-huh.
Probably would have lived
You are wealthy.
Well, I would have been more wealthy, I think, with less effort, if you see what I mean.
Right.
You know, it's easy to make loads of money as a lawyer. You just talk a load of bollocks to somebody and then hand them a bill for 10 grand.
Isn't that what you do now?
That's a bit harsh.
Well, I mean, you know, there are those who would say that's exactly what you do.
Yeah. No, but I mean,
it just takes slightly longer to get it.
Yeah, and you don't tell as many people when you're a lawyer. You just tell somebody across the desk.
You don't have to dress up either.
You don't have to dress up, that's right. And as for Ashley, anybody called Ashley, I simply don't like.